Welcome back.
This is podcast 28, or number 28 of the Slide In Podcast. Kelly Gallup, Braden Anderson. Let's start with an easy question today. We've got a Wooga Wooga One on YouTube saying, what does Kelly think of Oros Bobbers?
You have no idea where this is going to go from here. So first, it's a wooga, wooga, wooga. It reminded me of a train, which secondly, bobbers reminded me of Mel flashing trains. And I told her just yesterday, you don't flash the train anymore. First date, one of her first dates, we're standing, going up to the Blackfoot, and she, train comes by, and she just whips them out. Hey, how do you, I go, I'm just kidding if your mom or dad are listening, but so you don't flash enough trains. But I think that is the best bobber that's ever been invented. But there's a reason it sells
things. We're back to the Oros bobbers now.
You know, Ooga Booga bobbers.
Right. Yes, okay, right.
How hard is this to deviate from the average?
I'm slow. You gotta walk me through this.
It is the best, simplest. It's just what you want out of a bobber. And they come really small, so you can make, you know, one of the problems, ideally, if you're going to fish a bobber, you kind of step down. So you go from the 1 inch or whatever, those giant, you know, 3/4, 1/2, and they got 1/4. And I love that, because if you're reliant on that bobber to totally suspend for you, you need to keep working forward, right? And so, I mean, the idea is it's nothing wrong with it. Just they're not as efficient. No matter the bigger they are like that, the harder they are to cast. If you can just keep scaling down and not be quite so dependent on that, you know, giant visual. There's just so much shit going on right now when we started bobbers right there. all the metaphors, all these things are come out with the giant visual with the little tiny. But anyway, you should step back. But I do think if that's a baited question as far as do I think is there something wrong with them? I do not. I mean, I still like to fish a bobber once in a while. I don't do it very often. I almost always just straight, tight line, no, hardly any indicator really, maybe some cider or something, but I still dig it. I still do. I like going out and watching it.
It's fun just watching the bobber go
down. Yeah, it's nothing. I mean, there's the nothing wrong with it. If that's all you ever do your whole life, that's just great. It doesn't mean shit. But there's a lot of like, oh, bobber fishing. There's a lot of all that dumbass shit and everything. So, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But I think he hit it out of the ballpark. I think it's the best ever. We started out with, you know, if you go back through all this, when that kind of stuff showed up, shoot that dog, would you? Got a gun?
Yeah, I do.
Let me land you one.
It's my right
foot. Shoot that dog. That dog's going to go out that door and come back to the front door and bark in about 1 minute. But the bobber thing, it started out with yarn, right? I mean, if you go back in time, it's not going to flip over. You could flip that freaking thing around so it goes the other way.
I'm going to move it around a little bit so I fall forwards instead of backwards.
You're an annoyance to have on the set, just between you and me.
My mother used to tell me that.
Yeah, so, but I mean, you go back in time, it started out with the indicator thing. That was Braden wasting our time playing with his chair. Unlike me, who sits here completely sedimentary, never move or fidget.
Always on task and focus.
Never, ever once doing that 50 times a show. But back to the bobber, it started out with yarn, which was really heavy. A lot of people loved it. And then it came rondicators, which was all strips of foam that looked like yarn. And then we got the thingamabobber, and then phase two with the screw on it, and then they had to recall that. That opened the door for airlock first one. They put the thing on it, the nut on it, and then thingamabobber came back, and then that, and then the airlock did another version of theirs, and then the Oros came out, and it's going to be hard to top that one. No moving parts. super simple on and off. You can multicolor it by two and get, you know, whatever color thing you want. I don't, you know, it's okay to fish bobbers in a lake, but not in a river. All that, just, that is such crock of shit. I just think it's, and if I was taking somebody out that hadn't fished, the first thing I would do.
Yeah.
I'd throw on a bobber. So the short answer, I think it's the best indicator it's ever been invented.
Yeah.
It'll
yeah,
be interesting to see who can improve it.
Obviously, there's more specialized ones for lakes and stuff, you know, slip bobbers. But
slip bobbers,
in terms of what the Oros is asked to do, generally being a a river bobber, it doesn't.
How do you matter. Yeah? How do you fix it?
So
it
simple, holds, works. Like the inline thing, right?
Yep. That, everything's simple.
I think the only trouble I've heard with it is people who I respectfully really question their intelligence. They say they can't get the line through the middle. They think they have it on there. They screw it on and they cast and it comes off.
I can see how.
I've heard that from a number of people, one being my father. So sorry, Mark, Father Mark.
And your,
I guess I do have his genetics.
And your former boss.
Oh, yes. My former boss.
If I don't have my glasses on, my cheaters,
right.
I can't see that little, I mean, I'm, you know, and that's the only thing that's, you'll get through it, you know. The good thing is if you drop the son of a bitch, it floats and you can go chase it.
Yeah.
Not like when you drop the nut on the old ones.
Yeah.
Remember that? Remember how many people come in and we'd save the excess and they'd come in.
Well, I guess I'm just tightlining into that.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I could see how.
Hey, Chuck, what was that video Oros put out that you said don't do that on? All right. I guess we won't go into that because a lot of our guides do that. They're dragon streamers. Mm-hmm. There's a guy who made a video about, I guess we will go into it, made a video about essentially nymphing streamers from
dragon.
Flood. Yeah.
We all do it. Everybody does. All the guides do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, tons of people do. But Chuck hates it. A lot of us don't like it.
Well, it's really pushing the limit. I mean, mooching or there's a lot of it. It's really pushing the limit of fly fishing. I mean, especially considering you don't cast. Plop it out, and if you're really good at it, you mend your line where you want your fly to go.
Yep.
And the sin of dragging is casting it. Because as long as it's out there, it's hunting.
It's hunting. Yeah.
And the more it drags to you, you can't screw it up. You really can't. If you pick your line up and it comes too fast, well, who's to say a minnow isn't just swimming fast?
Guess what? You're fishing a streamer.
Yeah, you flip it that way and it takes off that way and it's like, hallelujah.
I know.
For those of you who don't know what it means, you put a split shot above a streamer and you put it under a bobber.
It's just nymphing a streamer. Now, it's
even worse. You don't, at least you pick up a nymph and replace it.
Yeah.
When you're dragging and doing it right, you throw your line, places where you want the fly to end up, and if you're good at it, like Johnny's, you know, you see it coming and you mend way past and kind of follows your, you know,
it'll chasing your fly there, line. Yeah.
So, I mean, but it's not new.
No, it's not new. It's not new technology. But I know, like one of our guides, Andrew, I'm sure a couple of our other guides do it as well, but Andrew will use it as a teaching method to get people to start understanding how to move their fly without sinking line or without breaking off a ton of flies, right? They have this indicator as kind of a visual, and they can start out, you know, sort of nymphing it, and then, you know, strip, jerk, and you can do that all, and then eventually he'll kind of, you know, take the training wheels off and put them on the big boy setup. But
yeah, that would have not my favorite way to go, but times are tough. Can't say as I've ever really done it guiding, but
I'll tell you, I'm not good at it. I remember Matt and I went out after everybody was talking about it and we tried it.
There's a real science to getting that split shot, just the right distance, you know, whether you're a 20 inch or whatever, you're 2 foot or there's a science to it.
There is. Yeah. You get your lengths and weights.
There's a real science to it, but
it's stupid. Don't do it.
And it's stupid deadly.
Can't be.
It can be really deadly.
Especially after like a sculpin kill or something. Mm. All right. So that's Oreos bobbers. A little sidetracked there, but we got there eventually.
Best bobber ever.
All right.
I don't like them in the lake. I don't do a slip bobber in the lake.
Yeah, yeah.
Sidebar.
I was running.
If you're really shallow, it would be
one
thing.
Yeah, if you're really shallow, it's fine. But as soon as you've got the leader length, that's longer than your
There's a reason that you...
All right, this one comes from CodyX7P. Hey, Kelly, we don't all have a hot girlfriend or Johnny with mad rowing skills to row us down the river. Got any advice or tips for fishing?
That was going to be how to pick up the river.
Yeah, can you teach me?
Yeah, 1978, Christ. How to pick up chicks.
Got any advice or tips for fishing from a one-person pontoon or a frameless raft? And then Zalkulsa says, yes, I'd like to know if a Watermaster is a good investment in this situation. So I know you spent some time fishing from...
Yeah. This is pertaining to river, right? Did you say river or did you just say it?
I assume we're talking river. Because mad rowing skills
would
be a lake thing.
There's entirely different beasts. And I mean, I'm going to give you my 2 cents worth. They're great transportation tools, but they are shit to fish from. And I mean, in reality, dangerous as hell.
Yeah, you want to break a rod, you want to go
You want to flip your
jam.
Ass and do yeah. some... Now, if you want to kick flippers all day, that's the only way I ever did it. I don't give a shit what you're in. Watermaster, you get to carry more shit with you so you can lose more when you flip. They are not... If you're on a river... if it's relatively slow... I mean, I'm thinking about the Manistee where I grew up in Michigan, the upper Manistee. It's relatively slow, and I could run boner boats, you know, pontoon boats, or back then there was tubes, and you could use flippers, and you could fish, and you could position yourself, you know, like you want to fish over here, and you could fish here, and you could kick around, because you didn't have current. You got a lot of log jams, but not enough, you know, volume to push you into stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it was a very, very safe, you know, you still had your oars when you shit hit the fan, you had to get out of there. But anything on river like this, absolutely worthless. I mean, scary, bad habit to try. Not to get there. If you're on your A game and you're rowing it, you can go through some stuff.
Yeah.
The little short ones do tend to flip. You'll see that here quite a bit, but not usually dangerous because shallow water, but just not fishing from it. You're not going to fish from this thing, and it's all current, indicative of the current you're going to be in.
Yeah.
If you're on the Missouri, you could do it all day.
Yeah, the fins on it would be great.
Yeah, you can kick. And I never try to use it's when you straight, like, okay, I put my rod down here, and I'll do this shit. That's when you start dropping rods or get a fish. And you just look dumb. You just really look. And above all, don't look dumb. Right?
Right.
Just everybody's looking at you. So use your fins. But now you got a pain in the ass because you got to get out to walk around if you want to fish. So it's kind of you start with one and then you say, well, I'm going to try. And trust me, I've been the guy that looked dumber than anybody. I came up with an idea to have dual electric motors on my drift boat with a rod between them so I could do this and I could fish by myself. And it was on the slow river. It was the Manistee. I made 100 yards. I get sideways. I turn like this. And I'm like, oh, crap. And I got, I can't quite get it. And I take both motors off. I hit a tree about this front of the water. Break both motors off. Genius, right? I mean.
God, I would have loved to have that on.
Oh, my God. And I luckily had my oars with me. But I trashed them. Then I figured out one. I had a long pole in the back. I was going to do that. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't. It seems like a great idea. If we had something that you could have it built underneath your boat, like a little electric jet. Where you could just kick the ass end around and kind of do it from there, you could probably remote it. But on those kick boat things, complete, like if I was on the Henry's Fork, some of those stretches, I wouldn't be too worried. The problem is that to do it really well and fish from the boat, you really have to wear fins, because if you think about it, you're going like this and you want this angle and suddenly you're here. Now you got to grab your oar get back here. Well, a little bit too much. Okay, here. But if you're fins, you can do it. But now you get out to the run, you want to go fish, you take your fins off, right? So you're on and off and on and off. There is no great solution. You buy your own drift boat, that's great. You don't get to fish ever.
Nope.
Ever. You get,
it's really good,
again,
to have a friend that buys
them. You're
just
a transportation tool is all they are. Yep. And when you're solo.
Yeah.
And you don't buy one unless you're solo. And so, and not everybody has a hot girlfriend that can row.
Right.
Too bad to be you.
Yeah, so I don't have a hot girlfriend that can row.
You don't have a girlfriend, do you?
No.
Okay, well, let's just get that straight.
We call that playing the field, which is a great way to push off the question of why I don't have a girlfriend. So I own a Watermaster. I bought one because I wanted to go, you know, throw spay rods. And at the time, none of my friends threw spay rods. Now they all do. It's called culture changing.
Yeah, but that's a whole different world. I mean, that's a great tool.
It is perfect for that. So what, what I'm getting at, though, is I would, especially during...
You're rowing down to your spot.
Yeah, so, but I would bring a dry fly rod with me and try to either kick with my feet and keep it straight because I figure I could fish, you know, throw it out below me and just roll it. Well, you just spin, and then it gets skinny. So then your feet are down, and then you're like shuffling, pushing rocks, scaring probably every fish in the river. I have
And you have a fly out of the boat hanging there.
Oh, yeah. You don't know how many times, I'm sure you do actually. The listeners might not know how many times I have almost broken rods, lost rods, torn ACLs. I mean, the number of things that can go wrong and the hours I've tried to figure out a system that works, I just gave up. Now I just push down to the next rod I want to swing.
There's one person that saw me crash my boat, by the way.
Really?
I'm not going to tell you who it is.
Oh.
He just lives on the river.
Gotcha. So for a Watermaster, I think if you are...
A.K.A. the Wood Tick was his name.
The Wood Tick.
The Wood Tick.
Okay. Hopefully he's watching.
I doubt it. He doesn't live on the river anymore either. Mm.
So Watermasters, any of those, you know, kind of personal crafts or... awesome, like Kelly said, for transporting you to the next place you're going to fish. I think if you are, there's one guy asking me to talk about the Yakima River, which is kind of where I cut my teeth, and a Watermaster would be so perfect on that river when flows get high. And if you don't have friends who know how to row, or that, you know, maybe you don't have friends that fish. I didn't.
In your
case,
you don't have friends.
I don't have friends. None of my friends in Seattle fished, so I would go out there, and every once in a while, I'd rent a Watermaster. When that water gets high and it's, you know, pumping at 35K in the summer, there's plenty of runs that hold fish but are impossible to get into by foot. And that's where you can have that Watermaster. You can be waist deep in somewhere where you would never wade, but you've got this security around you, right? Where you can fall and just hold yourself in it. So, you know, nymphing, Euro-nymphing, trout spay. The only thing I don't really like it for is stripping streamers, where you really want to move a lot.
I've had several of them, and I really liked. I absolutely loved taking my, and that is actually how I dove a lot. I had a Bucks bag with had a double back platform. Mm-hmm. I just added onto it, and I could carry all my junk, carry, you know, a rod tube on the side. Had two rod tubes on the side, you know, I had a blast doing it. And I'd go down, you know, and just, I used to actually tether the raft off of me and dive, right? And that was a pain in the ass, but I just dive 100 yards, walk back up to my raft, whatever, fish the run out or whatever I wanted to do like that. I find it'd be really blessed. And by the way, there was a, what year was that? It would have been like 2000. Bucks came out with a electric motored pontoon boat, and it had a joystick, and you could fish. You could change the motor, and it would actually, in relatively slow water, you could actually fish pretty good. But it was pretty heavy and all that. But you know, as long as you like on this river. You just go down and get out and you fish, right?
Yeah.
And that's it. You're never going to fish.
No.
And in most rivers, you know, I didn't, I was really content to just get away and go down and fish a run and come back up.
Well, they're perfect for like last year, Chuck and I put in at Reynolds. Maybe, yeah. No, we put in $3 maybe. I don't remember where. But, you know, floated the rapidy stuff on the way down. They're so fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
Just being like a little bumper car.
And you just get out so and fish agile. The run and go up. And it's like there's people. You get out. You're like, okay, I'm out. I'll just go downstream further. But, and it's great. We do that a lot. A lot of our guests want to wade fish. Yeah. And we seldom will take somebody on a wade trip. We just say, well, let's take the boat. We'll take you to the good spots. From our perspective as guides and my perspective as the outfitter, I don't allow my guides to park within 100 yards of somebody on foot, right? You just don't do it. So you end up, if you're walk fishing and there's a lot of people, you're going to walk for a mile. You might, to get to your run in the little boner boats, you just take off and, you know, get below whoever, you know, go down a quarter. Who cares? Just float. Like you said, it's a blast to float in.
They're so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Chuck and I's takeaway.
Super maneuverable.
They didn't really eat it that well that day, and we're both just, we had so much fun just running that bigger water.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to go into much bigger water than that.
One of my neighbors, Scotty, he had one. He took off from here, and he did a wheelie on his.
Can happen.
He flipped it upside down. He come in here, looked like a just drowned rat.
Yeah, be
a goes, you know what you can't do? That second wave train. But he said he made it through it.
I remember Chuck, that day Chuck was borrowing my buddy Jack's boat, and he'd never rode one of the little ones before. And I've been in
they're
a ton.
They're pretty quick.
Right? And they're, I mean, you feel like you're in a race car, especially down around Valley Garden or around town when you get into those little side channels.
Yeah.
It's basically like drifting through them. So I take off pushing away from the ramp. Chuck's like, hey, wait up. I got to like figure out how this thing moves before we start pushing through these boulders. But
they're maneuverable. They're
super fun. Yeah,
Depends
Rich at Watermaster.
Does it say where he's from?
This guy?
Yeah.
No. No, Cody.
Cody? Well, he's got a lot of water down there.
No.
His name's Cody?
Maybe, yeah. Oh, maybe he's from Cody. I don't know.
Well, that's the short answer. The long answer is always.
Yeah. Rich at Watermaster, send me a new one. Mine's a little dinged up now. It's only 25 years old.
Watermasters are really popular.
Yeah, they're.
Especially the West Coast steelhitters. I see a lot of them running.
Definitely.
I think that's some Scotty Hollis.
Well, they're so great for swinging, particularly because you can stop at the head of a run, fish your run, and the boat can stay right around you, right?
By the way, if you're in Montana in a boatless section like this 7 miles, you can't fish from a boat. In Montana, I don't know about other states, you cannot do what you just said.
Right.
You cannot put your feet down. And I had pontoon boats that had a bar across the front, right? I could not stand with the bar with the boat below me and fish. I had to untie it and tether it to me. I asked the warden this because I was down there in mine going down to Big Bend, and he just happened to be at $3. I was just talking to him. I said, so what's it? Because it's to tether it and not have it start this like crazy swinging, you got to come off both pontoons.
Right.
Right. If you just do one, it will drag your ass down the river.
Because
it starts just,
all of a sudden it gets the drag.
And it's just like swinging around. It's like, God, stop. So that part's kind of a pain in the ass. If you have that, if that's what you're thinking about, that kind of fly only water, weight only water, boatless stuff. That's
it's
just
also
a sidebar for here.
It is also more annoying to have that boat around you. You know,
things
to catch line on.
I never did it. I did.
It's easier
and
to just
anchors,
dump it.
You can stand one up on an anchor. Seeing guys do that. Most people that I know. And you wouldn't want to do it in too big, but they use cannonballs for downriggers.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people out in the lakes use those.
Sportsman's Warehouse sells like a 2 or 3 pound, one of those little mushroom ones. I've seen guys use those, rig up their own little anchor systems.
Yeah.
But
don't drop one on while you're floating.
There's a guy, Lawrence, who will go float just after some of these rivers ice off. And there's still big snowbanks on the side, like the Yellowstone, when you get up high. he'll go float. And, you know, that snow is generally still down into the water. So he brings a little ice axe, jams that in the snow, and tethers off that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. But
he's
got some pretty neat boats. There's one other thing I was going to say about that.
I liked mine. Mine was kind of like the whole Huck Finn thing. It was like building forts and having my own little.
Yeah, like, it's just so like, much freedom.
I had lots of freedom with my boats and all that, but it was just a going back, real simplified.
Yeah.
And I dug it.
I love running into the smallest little channels and trying
to. Yeah, it was kind of cool. And,
you know, the other thing I do is.
I really like to have you row better.
I also like to. I take naps in mine constantly. You know, it's hot, I'll find a nice tree. And it's
you're inherently lazy.
I mean, like my clack doesn't have pods.
You don't have a fly pod?
No.
Grow up.
That hurts a little, but I'll take it. All right, let's do another one. We've got, where's the one I'm looking for?
Come on, you're burning
Gun
time.
Gun Bros Shooting.
Gun Bros Shooting?
Yeah, he said he's got a couple different questions. The one that jumped out at me was, thoughts on guides providing lunch. Are these the guys you want making you sandwiches?
Yeah. I've thought that many times. What were the viral of offenses video? Whatever episode that was when we were talking about it. I can't speak for, I've got hundreds of war stories, horror stories of exactly what you're asking about. One of them was a guide on the Beaverhead where I sent, or what? Beaverhead or Big Hole? And I sent Herm Thomas and JC 30 years ago to this guy.
That dog's been eating poop. That is
all dogs
so
eat
foul.
Poop.
Yeah, that's a
Ellie,
lot.
Ellie,
that
her
might
out.
Be something dead.
Huh? What's the difference? Oh,
man, you are so stinky.
Poop. She probably went and rolled and stuff.
You're out of here.
So, but this guy, to get to the person making your lunch, to the fireable offenses thing, I'll get back to this guy on the Beaverhead, I think it was. But in there, I talked about, for guides, fireable offense, dirty cooler, number one.
Yep.
Bleach is your friend. I say it every guide that's ever worked for me. If I find you have, I did fire my head guide in Michigan for it. Filthy, and I didn't know it. And because he's supposed to be enforcing that to be like going out and seeing Johnny's cooler dirty.
Yeah, a bunch of mold in there.
Gone. Yeah, I think it was just...
See ya.
As the girl who told me about it, Karen, said, it's like a Petri dish inside there. I said, oh, wrong thing. I wonder why she always brought lunches. But at any rate, they had... I'd look in the cooler. I would make... You're paying a lot of money to go fishing. And the last thing you want to think of is you got some... lazy piece of shit that didn't take time to make lunches, which a lot of guys just buy them. And around here, I think Uncle Lori, I think she does something like 400 lunches a day. It's unbelievable, right?
That's a lot.
Everything's in the bag, everything's wrapped, everything's there. Cooler just goes into a cooler, and it's done. A lot of our guides make their own. Look at them. They're bleach. You'll open that thing, and what you smell is bleach. That cooler, Scotty Howell. Or Scotty Hall, I mean.
Whenever people don't eat Scotty's lunches, generally I was a beneficiary of that. And let me tell you, that man makes some good
and
lunches.
Most of those cats are very Tupperware-ish and very, well, they're hip to making.
Scotty is, I mean, he's such an example of how you want to be about everything in life. But, you know, Scotty gets back from a trip, you walk over there, the trunk to his car is always open to air it out, right? Mm-hmm. So that he doesn't get mold in his truck. His boat is clean immediately.
Then he's inside.
Maybe we'll have a beer with him or something, but he is cleaning out his Tupperwares. He's prepping his lunch for
first
the next
thing
day.
Comes in, he backs it up, tips his boat up, sprays it down. Next thing that happens is he comes, you know, pulls his cooler, goes inside, puts it in to clean it. He's got a protocol. And so, did you hear that music?
No.
No, I didn't hear that.
Hopefully that didn't come across. But it's good to have a process.
You like I said, this Herm and JC were two of my all-time best customers. They had 20 years with me at least before I moved out here. And they came, and I sent them to this guy. And they, we always break for lunch at a certain time. There's a reason you break for lunch. You may not think you need that break, but you need that break.
Water, I mean, food.
Well, and you're, you may think you are, you know, the world's greatest caster, but about 1 o'clock, the shit starts going wrong, right? And you need a break. You, nobody can really fish 8 straight hours. And if you don't, the guide needs a break from you. I mean, he's rowing your ass down the river, and about 1 o'clock, people that want to go too long, it's when you start ducking flies or they start, you know, tangling up. It's like they just want to fish, 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 fish. Let's just take a 20-minute break, right?
Right.
So you really do need one. But I sent Herm over there to this guy, and about 1:30, they says, are we going to break for lunch? And he says, he kind of looked at him, and he said, and Herm said, you did bring lunch, right? He goes, well, I've got a loaf of bread and some peanut butter under the seat. He literally stopped the boat, got, and Herm and JC just sit there looking at him. He goes, what, you want me to make it for you? He got out of the boat and went fishing and left him a bag, literally a, who knows how long it's been in there, and some peanut butter. I mean, you know, tipping is really kind of not optional.
Right.
But it, but that, that would be like, you know, kiss my ass. Good luck on next year's guide.
Here's a dollar bill.
Yeah, I mean, it's just dumb. It's just like, so, yeah, there's people I wouldn't, you know, you didn't, it just, but it is what it is. If you go up and look. If you, if it makes you nervous. There was a point in Michigan, I know, where they made us, we couldn't have anything homemade. And because some senator got sick, probably from what he did the night before and with who, but it was, he, I don't know how, but we could go to this gas station and buy this shit that's been in a bag for 2 weeks, but we couldn't make our own.
Couldn't make one fresh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, and so I get it. If you, if it worries you, ask him. If you, you want to not piss me off ever, just walk in and say, can I look in the coolers? I'd say, come on, I'll walk you through every one of them.
And if the guide is pissed off about that, look yourself in the mirror. It's because the cooler's
dirty. The guide just pissed off. He's fired anyway.
Yeah.
I don't, if they, you want to go out, I mean, it's your trip. Go ask us, you know, how's our food made?
So I was talking to one of Andrew's clients the other day, and they were telling me about how impressed they were with Andrew's lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew brought a little stove and actually had canned soup and Ritz crackers and cheese and did the whole deal.
I don't. We did that. I actually had my first guide, no, my second boat, actually had a grill built into the back of it. I've got a picture of it at the shows because we would stop and grill brats or burgers or whatever. It's just, it just became,
it's definitely tedious.
Well, it went from, we need lunch to it's an event, right? And it would, I kept it with certain days, but it's pouring rain and you're trying to grill and, or it's blowing 80 miles an hour or whatever, you know, bring a thermos of, you know, coffee and a couple thermoses of soup and, you can still have all that without having to grill, but I'll show you that. I don't know if I just found it the other day, but it's just a built-in grill right on the back deck. What a pain in the ass for the guy casting back there.
Oh my God.
But we were snagging salmon then, so it didn't matter.
I guess nothing does. Yeah, I don't know, random, but my go-to lunch for fishing trips now is I'll just basically get all the ingredients of a sandwich, chop them up on a cutting board, bunch of sauce on there, and then I put it in a Tupperware.
Yeah.
Just scoop it into bread or tortilla.
That is how you are supposed to make lunches, so nothing gets soggy. Every guide here has been through that. You know, you don't put your tomatoes on your sandwich. You don't. There is a protocol for making guide lunches. There really is. And it's just, you know, how many times you have to have a sandwich that's soggy because you put too much shit on it? Well, the next time, you realize you just don't do it. You would hope after your second or third trip, you'd figured out how to make a lunch.
Yeah.
And if you went to, and nowadays guide schools are pretty common. When we were doing the FFF certified something way back when, it ended up being Orvis's, but there was five of us that set up these protocols. They're all guys from Mission. Charlie Weaver, Walt Grau, John Clusing, Tom Noms, me, one other guy maybe. And we, because we'd been guiding a lot, there weren't a lot of guides in Michigan. Mm-hmm. We'd been guiding, and we had a protocol for how to make a lunch. And actually, the people we were working with brought in a chef to show us. And basically, all he did was tell you to put your tomatoes go in a bag, your lettuce goes in a bag, anything moist goes in a bag, and your bread is always kept separate, and your meats are kept separate. Don't let them get on this and that, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, pretty much all common sense. And so, but yeah, it's a good point. I wouldn't be afraid to, I also wouldn't be afraid to bring what I wanted just in case I was going to be hungry.
Right.
You know, yeah. Guide lunches are really usually pretty good. Usually fruit, a snack, you know, sandwich, you know, whatever, and then just basics. But if you're a chow hound, don't be afraid to bring your own stuff with you or ask for it. I mean,
you know, who had it dialed was the those guys down in Chile. I love those lunches. They always had tomato and avocado and
everything,
chicken and rice.
Well, they didn't do shit. The chefs made those.
I know.
There's a big difference between having a chef make your lunch. Yeah, it's like Firehole. They're not making their lunches.
No.
Their coolers are filled.
Right.
Which is a really nice job.
Do you remember why the guide food stopped being so good?
No.
The one of the guides broke.
Oh, that's right. He broke up with the chef girl.
All of a sudden.
When we kept telling him he had to go back and take one for the team.
Yeah, she used to make all the guides great food for dinner.
We had a gal in Baldwin that set up a deal, and you had to have two coolers. You dropped a cooler off. You had a checklist, and she cleaned your cooler, made your lunch, all in Tupperware. She supplied everything except the cooler. You bought two coolers, and you just left it at the house with the list on it, what you want. You checked off what you wanted. I think she even had a default if you were too drunk, as usual they were, and they would forget. Her default was to go with whatever.
Yeah.
And she was so overwhelmed that she quit. It was such a great, I mean, you could do that here. You could do that in Ennis and you'd have to have 600 coolers.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it was so efficient. Her stuff was so good. And you just dropped off your cooler and you'd have your checklist. It was pretty good.
There's an idea for someone in Ennis.
There. Somebody come up with it. Go.
Thanks for the question, Gun Bros Shooting. All right, this next one comes from Matthew Dickens, 1050. It says, please discuss rod length and action for trout. It seems like the industry would have you buy 2 to 3 rods and weights 3 to 6 to fulfill your needs. I'm embarrassingly falling prey to this. I guess even more for heavy streamers. If you weren't a fly shop owner, would you still own a lot of rods? I have a glass rod that's kind of a chore to cast once the flies get too heavy, but I do love the bend when I have a fish on. What do you prefer for your standard action length for dries, for nymphs? I'm not really a streamer guy, but I have a brother who loves breaking 4 weights on big fish and big streamers.
Ooh, that's a long one.
Yeah, kind of a lot there.
I'll break that down to two different... He said lengths and actions. Well, let's go to the guts of it first. If I didn't own a fly shop, what would you? And it's pretty simple. There's rods are made in different lengths and weights for a reason, and it's not to sell you rods. Now go back 50 years, and basically everybody ran a 9'6" weight, you know, and or an 8.5'5". There was one or two, and a 9'6" weight was your all-purpose. But mind you, see this streamer right here? That would have been a big streamer back in the day, right? And I mean until you got into the 80s.
And that's a 1.5, 2-inch fly max.
Yeah, we'll do a close up of this fly. See if anybody, the wet fly guys, will get it in a minute. But it's my version of a classic wet fly in a streamer. We'll show it. I'll tell you what, we'll make it some sort of prize. I don't know what we'll come up with here. But it's, if you can tell me what wet fly this comes off of. But, so if you go back in time and you see that there was a lot more, or a lot less, excuse me, diversity in our equipment. Because we were much, less diverse back then. We didn't, people didn't get into niche type things. They just, you just did everything with one rod, the best. Like I've said that story before. The first rod that I had was a 9'6" that I got for Christmas, 1968, I think. And I fished cohos, steelhead, trout, bass. I didn't have two rods. It wasn't till I was in my teens where I saved enough money and I bought my first Fenwick glass. And that was a 7'6" four weight. And that was my trout rod, right? But I also, one time, I don't know, I broke my other rod or something, I fished cohos with it.
Yeah.
It didn't do it any good. But no drag on the reels and all that stuff. So it's just kind of I just held on. But so back to the actual question. So if I didn't own a fly shop, I would definitely still have, half a dozen rods because I fish a lot. I mean, the question on that also beckons, do you fish 20 days a year? Or do you fish 200, right? Or do you fish 150?
Did you fish one piece of water?
Do you fish a diverse amount of fisheries? I mean, do you fish steelhead? Do you fish trout? Do you fish streamers? And that's back to you. So going to if I had one rod, period, end of discussion, be a 9'6" weight. End of discussion, wouldn't go anywhere else. But that's only if I also fish streamers. If I did not fish streamers, if I was in the West, I'd have a 9'5" weight, and I would fish nymphs and dries pretty much through everything. You're going to get really pushy if you fish big flies like a salmon fly. And it's just the right tool for the job. If you try to fish a streamer with a four weight, you'll probably break most of them on a hook set. I mean, I've done it. Did it with when Sage had their RPL Plus, that was a 9'6", and I reached up and I grabbed an LL. I took it, I thought I was grabbing for this. It was a brand new rod. I needed one, so I took it off the shelf, and I reached up and I grabbed this rod, and I went out, and it was Jerry Dennis and Jerry Wilson and I, and we get in the boat, and I line it all up. I think it was a 250 grain head or line. I grab it up. I roll it out about 20 feet throughout like this, and my first cast like that, and snapped that swimmish right at the cork. I had an LL, a light line, right? Yeah. It was still a six weight. I busted that thing at the cork in half. There's a reason you have tools, right? And so if you only, have one choice, you got to first ask yourself, what are you going to do? If you fish bass, do you fish trout? Do you fish, pike? Do you fish dries? Do you fish wets? You got to figure that out, right? So if it's just a basic all-around rod, you really don't throw, if this is your idea of a streamer, this little fly, unnamed fly right here, and you don't go, you'd get by floating line. You could get by with even with a sinking line, if you kept it under a 200, you could still throw a six weight and if you didn't get into any crazy size flies, you could be, happy as a pig in shit forever. You would just be fine. If you're a dry fly person, I particularly like 8.5-5s, in particular on smaller water, but that's a dedicated dry fly rod. I think that's the most accurate casting rod for people that are tight quarters in particular. But if I'm a Western angler and I'm going to fish the Henry's Fork, I'm going to reach out a little bit more. Maybe I got a little bit bigger fly. I'm going to have a 9'5". That's my dry fly and my nymph rod, right? I can nymph fish. I can dry fly fish. I'm happy right there. If I'm going to fish streamers exclusively, then I'm a 9'7". These are general, just what I would do. Right. And everybody's going to have a different idea on the length of the rod. On my lake rods are almost all 10'6", almost exclusively. But you have to, they have different skis for a reason. You have different golf clubs. Do you really need, is it 13 of those things in the bag?
14.
14 in the bag. Do you really need it? Yeah, you really do.
Not if you're as good as I am.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, you just need 20.
Yeah.
But yeah, you and it's not all a sales pitch either. I mean, when you've got 3 9-foot four weights, you have issues, right? Yes. You're looking for something, and when it comes to actions, now you got a nine. Let's say you got a 9-foot. Let's say 5-weight, not fours, because a 9-foot 4-weight, regardless how fast it is, really doesn't have the balls to push out a salmon fly.
Right.
And it's gonna work you on a green drake. All right. So, but if you went into a 9-foot 5-weight, you could get by with a fast, like some of Sage's early rod, or I can't remember what one it was. Those rods were really 6-weights. They really were, but they were marked as a 4. You go back 10 years ago, man, everybody was lying. So it was all about, and if you can't tell the difference in that, then this is a, remember the thing from Friends? This is a moo point. Remember that? Because yeah. What was that guy's name?
It was probably Joey.
Joey. Yeah. Joey says it in the thing. He goes, moo point? And he goes, yeah, you know, it's like a cow's opinion. It doesn't really mean anything. It was hilarious. So it's a moo point.
God, I haven't watched Friends, but I'm going to have to.
It is. It's a great line.
It's a good one.
But anyway, if you don't get what action means in that, then you're probably a victim of being sold the wrong rod.
Yeah.
Because you can be, but when you realize if you've got a 4-weight that you're going to use for trichos and midges, and then you got a 4-weight that you're going to use for like a 14 to 16, you know, maybe even a 12, you'll be all right. And one's a softer action because you needs less weight to take a trico and, you know, and deliver it. If you don't know that, if you can't feel it, then you could be, like I said, a victim of being sold the wrong rod. Mm-hmm. But if you get it and you understand it, you're going to pick up a rod. And the first thing you should understand when you pick up a rod, the number on the side is generally bullshit. Whatever it says is usually not, it's getting better. And there's 3 or 4 companies are to blame for this, and they're all the big companies. They're the ones who said this is a 4-weight when indeed it was a 6-weight. It's because what you're going to do is go out in that parking lot and see who's got the biggest one there, and you're going to take a 4-weight and try to hook 60, 80 feet with it, which doesn't mean shit for where you're going to fish it. You're going to fish it at 25 feet. And that might mean 20. Somebody wrote in about, no, I do, every caster rates this in. 25 feet of fly line is 35, 40 feet away from you.
Yeah.
Just so you understand when we talk about this, is it 25 foot? That's your fly line. But if you look at a 10-foot leader, your rod extension roll, that's 18 feet with your arm and your rod extension without any cast whatsoever. That's just leader and that. So when you understand what the rod is supposed to do and what you want out of it, and you pick it up. I picked up a rod with a rep one day. It was a 6-weight. I said, that feels like, I picked it up and I was setting it down before he could even say something. And he goes, that fish is better with an 8. And it's a 6-weight. I said, well, then it's a freaking 8. It doesn't fish better with an 8 because it's not an 8. And we lied so long. I mean, probably 20 years of bullshit designations on rods. And so, until you understand what that feel is when you pick that rod up, it's really hard to argue back and forth like you would like this, I would like that. I like glass. I particularly love that Lodic TNT glass I fish. I don't sell TNT, but I bought it. I love the rod, right? I get it. I know what that rod to me is, just to coin Brian Fletcher's, it's like butter. It's like butter. So freaking smooth. I could fish that rod the rest of my life. Yeah. And it's a short rod. I think it's a 7.9. But I absolutely love that rod. And, you know, I absolutely detest most of the top end 4 and 5-weight rods made today. I just think they're absolutely, they're way too fast. If I have to upline a rod, then it's bullshit. I do not upline rods. I buy the rod for what If it's a four weight, I do not need to put, if I have to put a five weight on it to cast it, it's not a four weight. Right. That's why you have to figure out, do you understand that? You know, when you talk to pro jocks, when they're doing this stuff, they don't even play that bullshit game. They pick their out. I've never looked at it. I pick it up, go like this, and I don't even have to wonder what the line is. And if it says four and I got to put a six on it, that thing can go to the shitter. I don't. It's a six weight. I hate the company. You guys piss me up. I don't hate any of them, but it just pisses me off. What is Kelly pissed off about? We could do 2 hours just about the line and the fly lines or the fly rods, because we have a whole generation of rods or lines now. SA has four weights for a four weight.
Yeah. There's yeah, a four, there's true, a true half over, one over, and two over.
Yeah. One and a half two and a half over. Over. Yeah. So what the hell does that mean? That means you bought a four weight that is so stiff that the company lied to you that you really need a six weight on it.
Do you remember when
so then Jamie, you've got a rod that's too light to be a six weight. So when you do set, there's the tragedy. You set up, you take a rod that's a four weight. Well, it's still got the diameters and the strength of a four weight. And you set it up on a six and boom, jack one like that. And now you got a new five-piece rod.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so to never a short answer on this, but blame the, call the rod companies and tell them what a piece of shit you think they are for lying to you. Because just because you can take it there doesn't mean, doesn't, just like I did with that five-weight or that six-weight LL, which was a spectacular trout rod.
Right.
Just a really shitty streamer rod. So that's what you asked to start, length and action. I think I'm kind of doing that. And then you said dry nymph streamer. So a dry rod, again, for me, 8.5, 5, all-around rod, great. 9'5", probably the best all-around. And it's capable of going to a streamer, but really rather have a four-weight, and then I'd rather have a longer rod anyway. Mm-hmm. So now that I got two rods, maybe three there, because I might have two dry fly rods, and I'm going to have a dedicated, and I'd rather have a 9.5 or a 10-foot nymph rod. And then streamer rod, if I'm walk fishing, could be a 9'6", as long as it's a designated, a real one, like a streamer X, as long as it's real. But if I'm in the boat, most of the time I have a 9'7".
Yeah. I think that covers it pretty well. I think one thing that, you know, to make it really simple, these things are tools, right? And totally. Everyone has a very different application. So, for example, I do not own a fly shop, and I do have a lot of different fly rods to cover these different things. You know, there's a lot of people that do a lot of really small creek fishing too, where they're fishing ones, twos, or threes, where they've got, you know, small, like a lot of guys on the East Coast, the native brook trout thing. A lot of them fishing Reddington butter sticks and tiny rods.
And
six, Echo Gecko is actually a super
and
fun
six footers. That's when you start seeing the niche rods that come into play.
Yeah.
Now that rod was always stupid. I thought you were going to talk about that Sage 08.
Oh no,
that was kind of fun though.
Yeah.
But it was, but again, it's the funny thing is when you ask, almost all fly guys are golfers, and they really trash their shit. They throw it at things, they slam them down, and they've got
here comes the putter
thousands of yeah, because it's definitely that shitty putter, not you. And so, what's a 14 pack of in the K? What is it? How much is it?
I mean, you could spend $600-700 on a driver alone right now.
So just what?
Like if you do the PXGs,
so you could have $5,000 worth of clubs.
Yeah,
easy.
four to five. Yeah.
So there you go.
You're getting them,
but you would not. Two. You wouldn't think about going. Didn't it used to be 9? It seems to me like when I started golfing, there was 9 clubs. Yeah. It seems like it, but maybe I'm probably wrong.
I don't know.
But I mean, when you think about other sports where you do something, just like fishing, you know, you have all those tools in that bag. Mm-hmm. So in reality, if you think about all the different styles of fishing that you've got to do out there, if you're going to dry, nymph, wet fly swing, streamer, topwater, you know, bass or anything like that, obviously, you need a tool designated for it. Can you get by? You could get by with a wedge and a driver and an iron, yeah. And you could.
And you'll
out golf me it with those three clubs. And you could probably putt with your freaking driver, right? And still out putt me. But would it be as fun? No. And would you like it as much? No. And that's just like we are. You know, if you're a skier, you've got a powder ski, you got a hard pack ski, you got a lot of ski. We don't seem to mind that tool. And if you are a hunter, I am a casual hunter at best and probably have 60 different weapons, yeah. Right? Not to mention how many handguns I have because I'm a junkie.
Right.
And just to go walk in the woods. So, I mean, oh, well, I'm going to take this one today. Oh, what do you think? The bear's smaller?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I don't know. I just like this one today.
I feel like you
can. And my girlfriend owns the biggest gun shop in Montana, shedhornsports.com. Call her, tell her. Maybe she'll row you down the river.
Yeah.
Tramp. Just kidding, baby. Just kidding.
You can get heat for that one. So I think that, you know, golf and skiing, I think there's benefits to actually like not using the right equipment. There's things you can learn from that, right? Like I don't know if that exists in fly fishing. My high school golf coach would make us go play a short nine. Said you get two clubs and there's a 160-yard hole. And there's a couple of 80-yard holes. And he said, if you bring a putter, you're a complete sucker, right? Like you might as well use that club for something different.
Yeah.
So, but you have to putt really well to hit a ball with a wedge. That's besides the point. Skiing, right? You could go ski super deep snow and skinny skis. And if you don't have good form, you're going to really struggle.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's those benefits to trying to throw a salmon fly on a
I do think there are. I disagree with you on that. I do think if you're relegated to one rod and it's a 9'6" like I was, you are going to adapt. And when I left skiing for quite a while, right? And skied, I did a lot of that. And then just quit, right? Yeah. And that was, and I completely missed the fat ski. When I was skiing for Hart, we had that shaped ski, that the freestyle. That was way back when, and they would, you know, it was so radically different than anything we'd seen before. You're talking about 6 millimeters. Now you're talking about 20, right? And I got on one of those skis.
Huh? 50 millimeters? I've got skis.
I have no idea.
135 and skis that are 80.
But when you went from a shaped ski from what I'm running back in the 80s into the shaped ski, huge difference. Now you take that to fly fishing. If you used a glass 9'6" weight, and you basically had one line, which was a floater, and you step into a Sage R8, that new, you know, the new Sage rod, which is on my good list.
The classic?
Yeah. You step into that, and man, your life just, you see things differently, you know.
Yeah.
Or like shotguns, right? I could shoot any gun and shoot it like shit. But you will progress if you started like I had that Stevens behind the counter forever. Everybody go, what's that? It's mostly to save myself from swamp, you know, my fall in the swamp to stop myself on the way down.
Yeah.
And I go hunt with Jerry, who can't miss anything. He's shooting a fox and it's worth $10,000. Well, that rod doesn't mean a thing, or that gun doesn't mean a thing to me. I'm not as good as he is, right? I've done a lot of tying things where I talk about tools, and I said, and I talk about woodworking. I covet a $5,000 table saw, but I'm only good as my $1,000 saw.
Right.
Well, actually, I'm not as good as my $1,000. And most people aren't as good as their ski, aren't as good as their club, and aren't as good as their rod. Mm-hmm. So, will it make you better angler? No, but it might make you a better caster, in the respect that if you're trying to throw a streamer with a 6 weight that's really a little bit closer to a 5 because it's old or whatever, you're not going to do as well.
Yeah.
So once you get past a certain point, like fishing the same rod for better half of 10 years of my life, when I got that little dry fly rod, once I slowed down, I was like, oh my God, my flies are delivering softer, things are like that. So
I started with a My very first rod was an 8 foot four weight Sage, like Foundation, I think. It was whatever their entry level rod
was. Yeah, it was Foundation.
I got it when I was six.
Or Discovery.
So 2003. And, you know, all I did was fish little dry flies for a really long time in Alpine Creeks, and then started getting into streamer fishing and nymphing and stuff. And it was brutal to nymph with that. But I remember going to Silver Creek and throwing streamers with a 8 foot four weight and trying to make it work. And I feel like there's some learning in there. But I don't know if it has the same value that it does in.
The only thing I can liken it to is saying that I got to the tee with my wedge and just couldn't drive as long.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And
it's the wrong tool.
It's the wrong tool. And so is it marketing? Hell yes, there's marketing in everything. But is it functional? Yes, it's equally as functional to have the right tool for the right job. But you could get away with four rods max the rest of your life and be happy as can be.
Yeah, so I mean, you can get away. You can get away with one rod. If you really like fishing, you're going to have more than that eventually.
Yeah, you can get away. You can do anything with a 9 foot six. You can do virtually anything. Just not well. I mean,
you're making sacrifices.
If you were Howard Crossan, you can do anything, right?
Yes.
You can do.
Howard can do anything.
Anything. Yep. There's like three of them in the world.
Right.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Tiger Woods and Scottie Scheffler. And
yep.
There's those people in the world. But most of us aren't them. Yes. And other than the practical side, it's just more pleasant to have the right. It's more fun to swing the right rod than it is the wrong one.
Yeah. You ever tried to throw dry flies on a spey rod?
No.
Not for steelhead? Yeah. I did one day when there was great hatch. Yeah. It sucks. It's much more pleasant to have the right equipment.
I got so beat up by the spey guys in Canada one time. So I says, you can't animate a fly. Of course, all they're thinking is swinging them. I'm talking about 30, 40 foot casts, one every 11 seconds, and animating a fly with the tip of my rod. But yet, we go to, somehow it goes to spay. It's like, do you race your Porsche off-road too? Good for you.
Right
tool for the job. That's why they made Jeeps.
Are you going to bring your spay rod to the salt?
Yeah.
And you're on a flat looking at bonefish coming at you?
Yeah, I mean, right tool for the job. So it's just really simple. And that was back to the $1,000 rod. And I never once said that there was anything wrong with $1,000. I've got lots of them and I like them. And some of my glass is pretty damn expensive, right?
Yeah.
And I was just getting to the point that a lot of the Korean, why do you put your hand back in the dog that rolled in shit? And
no, that's at the your clean hand. Dog. My hand's just so wet and I don't know what to do with it now.
So
clean that off. Huh?
The $1,000 rod thing didn't mean that. And I people write me all the time, oh, there's a thousand. I've got lots of them and I like them. And even the 800s and all that stuff. What I was getting at is that you can buy, so if you're the person who wants to dedicate one, but you want a 9 foot four weight, a lot of those rods that come in those kits or whatever, the Korean rods, are great.
Yeah, really
they'll do the job. And I'll tell you something else. Most of those rods are true to weight.
Yeah.
Because they aren't lying to you. They're actually giving you a rod to start with that actually does what it's supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're really pretty well finished out nowadays. They're better than anything I had the first 15 or 20 years of my life, fishing life. I mean, they're shit. Other than my cousin Billy snapping every tip off every rod I give him, my original Traverse kit is still going strong. Yeah. Other than, as usually, broke that much off, you owe me, piece of shit.
Yeah, there's that one down at the North Slide that's seen a lot of parking lot time.
Dude, when you can't break one, that's what they're for. So that was a really long answer, right?
Yeah.
We covered a lot of ground there.
There's also another guy, forgive me, I'm not going to take the time to find it. I can't remember who it was, but he asked on that video that we did about the Traverse kit, the first time when you went out and fished it, came back and loved it, he asked if that would be a good streamer rod. What are your thoughts on that?
No. It was a 5 weight.
I think we were talking about the 9.6, or I think he was asking about the 9.6 in this comment.
Again, it would be okay.
It's a little.
It's not quite buddy enough. It's, again, if the unnamed fly, if that was your idea of a streamer, it would be fine.
Yeah, if like but, mini dungeons are as big as you're going to get, then yeah. that's...
Or Nicky that's Finns what, and Royal Coachmans and yeah. Muddler Minnows and woolly, stuff like
woolly
that.
Buggers.
Woolly buggers. Yes. If you were to go into hair-headed flies that start moving water, you know, small articulated fly, you'd be okay. Wouldn't be perfect. Just because it's a dry... it's if it's suited with a 9 foot, 6 weight dry line... it's right on the edge of being able to carry the grainage of the line, carrying the fly, because no matter how great a cast you are, that's why we, you know, the world thinks we're, everybody talks about when they write in and they're telling me how great they are about, and I'm so full of shit because I can do anything with this rod. Well, there's a reason that the lines now have 4 grain weights for every rod, right? Because the rods aren't true to weight. And so, yeah, if you're a superstar, you can do it with anything. But again, match your tool to your fly. If you want to throw a sex dungeon with it, it will be not good.
No, not fun.
Not fun.
Especially and now it, with that stock leader on there.
Stock leader, stock line. You've got a dry fly tapered front end on your line, which means it's got a longer transition down to the tip, which is designed to reduce energy as your line unfolds, not made to have a fly that may be twice as heavy as your entire line.
Right.
The idea of fly casting is that the line is heavier than the fly. You put on a 5-inch sex dungeon that's wet, and now it may weigh 400 grains.
Yeah.
Right?
That's when you get all that weird kicky yeah. shit where that line
and so is
follows
it, can you do it? Yes. Is it pleasant? No. If you match your tool to your tool, if you match this fly or even like a blonde or a virtually any woolly bugger, hell yeah, it'd be just fine.
Yeah.
The 6-weight would be just fine for any kit rod would be, but just know, and you probably could upline that Traverse kit. It would be tragic because it's so beautiful the way it is.
God,
but
it's great.
I would be more inclined to check and see if you could find one of the other rods. Maybe Traverse. I don't think they have a 7.
I don't believe they do.
I don't think so.
That, you know which rod is a
I don't think so.
Great bargain rod that my dad came out here and he broke his rod, so he just wanted a cheap replacement. I got him that Douglas, you know, the light gray one, the ERA mm-hmm. or ARA.
Yeah, I love that rod.
$180 rod, and we were throwing a 200 grain head on it, carried it great.
I would also look at Reddington.
Yeah.
I mean, Reddington has a ton. So does TFO. And that was kind of my point about going back to this $1,000 rod thing. It is economical enough nowadays that you can go into these $300, maybe $400 even, in the Korean sticks, and they're incredible rods, and you can have a cache of rods that is everything you asked it to do. You don't have to go spend $500, $600, $700, $800, $1,000 to get a good set of clubs.
I mean, I fish only budget rods. I've got one nice rod that I was gifted a long time ago. And other than that, I fish a lot of Echo stuff, Reddington stuff. And it's all, the $200 to $400.
That was the whole point. And I can assure you, it's kind of like we were talking about knots when I said, you get 4 pros sitting in a boat, none of them are going to say,
yeah, what rod are you?
Yeah. Nobody, because they can, you take Andy Mill and just say, here's the rod. Great. Great. You know, they'll just fish it. And so that is the marketing end. If you want the real honest answer, that would be the marketing. Oh, you got to have this rod. Yeah, nobody has to have it. And you'll adapt, right?
This rod is completely unique. There's no single other one like it.
This one's 40% more accurate, or whatever that stupid 4 times as accurate, or what was the thing, that Orvis thing?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
Joke that was.
30% more accurate or something.
By who?
You see that one guy wrote me back. I was talking about the Black Edition. He's like, you're totally wrong. It's an entirely different rod. Yeah, you're probably right. Whatever, I don't care. It's stupid.
We should ask Brian.
Fletching?
Yeah.
Is he a big Orvis guy?
Huge.
Yeah.
Probably one of the biggest.
One of the biggest, yeah.
Yeah. And he had a real dislike.
I've never
for
fished one.
He had a real dislike. I don't know which one it was.
It's fun to get angry at things on the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's do.
Chuck, go to the other end and unwind that. What's up? Nah.
You should see the fish this dude just caught.
Yeah?
Really? All right, we're pausing because we want to see.
Pause this. For big
Actually,
fish.
Actually, you want to come over here? We'll put this in.
Watch your feet. Yeah. Oh, I can't walk. Holy shit. Nice.
Yeah.
You mind if I take a photo of that? Here, I'll get you in it too.
Where did I just meet you?
I came in from Austin.
Yes, just 2 days ago. And you were going to experiment. We said, he's going to crush it.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Right. That's a biggie.
We'll probably leave that.
What did it eat? What did it eat?
It was a little black scallop head.
Sweet.
Single hook.
Nice.
Tiny little thing. They were kind of going just super slow, swinging, and kind of right when it got to the bank, I would just give it a couple strips and
chowed it. That's what
they were. Nice. I heard big fish don't eat small flies.
Yeah, exactly. That's beautiful, man. Good job.
Yeah, we'll cut some of this, back. Keep some of that in.
Did you get the picture?
That was cool. Yeah. Yeah. I got a photo of the photo.
Photo of the photo?
Photo of the photo.
We'll have to put it. Yeah. I forgot his name.
Hey, what was your name again?
Thomas.
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 Cool.
From Austria. Didn't know, oh my God. What am I trying to think of? Look for his phone, his number. Roman Mauser. I know you're talking about somebody that he didn't know. Roman Mauser.
Thomas from Austria. Big fish. All right.
Very handsome feller.
Let's do what's Kelly pissed off about today.
Do I have something today? What am I pissed off about today? No, I wasn't really pissed off about anything today, but until we started talking about fly rods.
You're pissed off that I almost went to an engagement party.
I'll ask everybody out there. I won't tell you what I told. He was talking about not going fishing and going to an engagement party. And I told him that he was.
I don't think we can put this.
We can't really put what I said that he does for a living if he goes to an engagement. Men don't go to engagement parties and they don't go to baby showers. That's just a rule.
What about a bridal shower?
Well, you do have a target-rich environment at a bridal shower. I'll give you that.
There's also my mother that's hosting this bridal shower for my oldest friend in the world.
Your mother should know that men don't do this.
I'm not going because Kelly bullied me out of it. And we might have to be filming. So, yeah, thanks for being pissed off about that. Kelly did send me some very funny texts. By the way. Who typed that first text? Was that Mel? There was punctuation. It was kind. There was no way it was you.
Well, I probably wasn't doing speak and spell.
Oh.
If I sit down and.
You knew what a period or question mark was. It was just one constant.
That's how you rant on the phone.
You just have to
when
guess
I'm
where
speaking
it
into
and
speaking
stuff.
Spell, that yeah. British chick that I have talking to.
Yeah.
And you should see, I did that with Billy yesterday. And I said, well, it's same here. You know, cloudy and rainy. And it says, I'm in Iran here. And I'm like, the first one I ever did on that, I sent to my daughter, Madison. And I think I said this another one.
Yeah, you
I
did
said,
tell this
Can't
one.
Wait. I said, can't wait to see you at lunch tomorrow. And it said, what she got was can't wait to rub your inner thigh. Now, how do you get that one?
Yeah, that's kind of a.
So, but luckily she's funny. But I wasn't pissed at anything
that
today until you brought it up. And now it was the fly rod thing about.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot we did that.
It's kind of like all the Democrats turning on themselves right now, and that's what they should have done in the fly fishing industry. We should have turned on these companies that did it.
You know what? That's a good point. On the topic of politics, let's talk about something behind the desk.
I saw one that U.S. Border Patrol, that segues great into my political thing, but right
really
beside...
Trying to throw you for a loop there.
But here's something that's pretty... Did I talk about this before? This is really
I don't think we've talked about that on the podcast.
Okay. For those of you who can't see it, it's a beat-up sex dungeon. This is actually one of the first brown sex dungeons. It's chomped, right? Let's get him where you can see him. So he's got a parasol for a hoodie, right? So this fly, I was fishing.
So for the folks that can't see, it's a dungeon.
It's a dungeon, and I took a piece of 40-pound chameleon Maxima, and I believe it's 4 inches or 3 inches. No. What is it?
That's 3 inches. Trust me, it's exactly 3 inches.
To the end, yeah, but to the, it's 3 inches to the top of the. It's funny how you would know about 3 inches.
Thanks for picking up on
I was
going
to let, no, I was letting it ride for a minute. But anyway, to the actual piece of mono is, you're going to fall over, is 2 inches long with 1 inches, 1 inch of marabou tied to the top. And I was, this thing actually worked. And it was, the idea was I couldn't track my fly on the big hole. And I was fishing, it's always tanicky,
yeah,
right? But it was a little bit off color more, and I was having trouble. I wanted to see, because I was fishing a lot of morning shallows, and I wanted to see that fly. And so I gave it that dodger on the top. And what it does, it only goes back to about here, which is about a 30-degree angle when I'm stripping it. But you'd see it flopping around. And it would sometimes do a little of this back and forth. They'd shit out of it. I could track the fly and never did another one. But it was a kind of a cool concept. So if you can't see it, sticking straight out between the eyes. And you can go
it's
look
at it. It's
almost
like an umbrella off the top of its
yeah.
head.
And it was...
That, you know, that got blown up by the wind.
And so if you like tracking your fly, and in particular, musky fools, look at this and find a way... He'll do all kinds of weird shit with it. You can have him going all over the place.
Yeah.
And it never, and I heated and bent the mono. So it's like, you know, a little spring. I'm sure the musky fool guys could figure out some way to do this all over a fly. Or that chick. What's that chick's name? God damn, she makes fly tying look sexy. And all you see is her fingers.
Oh, yeah, that's the, yeah. That she ties flies.
Oh my God, she's good.
Okay.
But she could take this and find out something really cool to do.
Remember when we were talking about doing ASMR fly tying videos?
No.
That's what she does. It's all like the really, it's the sound. Dude, you know, she like taps shit. It's a thing people like.
Dude.
I don't know why.
We should have done it because I'm a total junkie.
Yeah, but we couldn't have done it like she does.
No.
She does a really good
I said
job.
That to Mel. I said, this chick, I've never seen her picture, right? I said, this chick makes fly tying sexy. And she's just dumping stuff out in her hand. You never see her.
No.
Right?
Just click, clack.
But
the
way
the
she
scissors,
manipulates
the sound
her,
thing, yeah.
She manipulates the materials. And then.
She's also a great tire.
I was just about to get to that.
Oh,
and then she goes, you know, makes it look so simple and wow. It's like, wow, that's perfect. That frog she did. But she could do this thing and figure out a real functional use for it. Mine was just tracking the fly. And it worked. It was kind of cool looking. Never didn't really change the fishability of the fly or that day they were on pretty good that I was fishing it. But it's kind of a cool little concept if you want to play with it. He's always sitting right back here with his head up. Hey, come back here, mister.
All right, band of the week. What you got? I'll go Sierra Farrell. She's country. New country. Good country.
I wrote something down. I wanted to make sure I remembered it to see if I... Steve Earle. Copperhead Road.
Steve Earle.
Johnny and I used to get inebriated and jam Steve Earle for whatever reason. We were going to parties around here. That was our... Get ready and go, you know, maybe two or three times. Kind of like Blackfoot with Train Train. When Jerry and I and Billy used to go to work at the Green Apple in Grand Rapids, we would always crank that at least twice for it was about a 10-minute drive. So that was just a good sock of hippie. Get feeling good about yourself.
Yeah, ours was always Thunderstruck.
It's good too.
Yeah, it was a good beer drinking game. Have you heard, do you know
yeah,
the game
yeah.
along with
all
it?
Your games? Yes, you've told me before. You'd be dead. You would die.
All right. We'll see. We'll have to test that theory.
You can tell the world.
Whatever. Thanks for watching. Like, subscribe, all that stuff.
Appreciate it. Hope you liked that one.